Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. War is a Racket is a short, forceful anti-war classic attributed to Major General Smedley D. Butler, one of the most decorated USU Marines of his era. Written during the interwar years and often presented as an outgrowth of Butler's public speeches, the book argues that modern warfare frequently serves private profit more than public safety. Butler frames war as a business arrangement in which a relatively small group benefits from contracts, finance, and resource access, while the costs are paid by soldiers, taxpayers, and grieving families. Using the plain-spoken style of a career officer, he challenges patriotic rhetoric that can mask economic motives and distorted incentives. He also turns his critique inward, reflecting on how military power has historically been used to protect commercial interests abroad. Though brief, the work has endured because it connects battlefield sacrifice to the political economy behind mobilization, procurement, and post-war debt. Readers come away with a sharper lens for evaluating calls to intervene. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, war as a profit system, not a public service. A central idea of war is a racket is that war often functions like an industry with reliable winners, regardless of the stated ideals. Butler presses readers to look past slogans about honor or destiny and examine the financial pipelines that expand during conflict. He points to how large sums flow to contractors, suppliers, shipping interests, and financiers as governments race to equip armies, build fleets, and sustain long campaigns. In this framing, the battlefield is only the visible surface. Underneath sits a network of procurement, credit, and political influence that can reward escalation. The book pushes a simple question. If the public is told a war is necessary, who is getting paid, how much, and under what guarantees? Butler also highlights how profits can be protected through cost-plus contracts or other arrangements that socialize risk while privatizing upside. By contrasting wartime windfalls with the long tail of taxes, debt, and veteran suffering, he argues that the distribution of benefits and burdens is fundamentally unequal. The topic matters because it shifts war debates from purely moral arguments to measurable incentives, making it harder for profiteering to hide behind patriotic messaging. Secondly, the hidden costs carried by soldiers and citizens, Butler emphasizes that the people who pay most for war are rarely the ones who decide on it. He draws attention to soldiers who supply their bodies, time, and futures, and to families and communities that absorb injuries, trauma, and loss. Beyond human suffering, he underscores the financial costs that fall on ordinary citizens through taxation, inflationary pressures, and long-term public debt. In this view, war produces an asymmetric exchange. A minority accumulates gains while the majority inherits obligations. The book also pushes readers to consider indirect costs that are easy to ignore during mobilization, such as reduced investment in domestic priorities, disruption of labor markets, and the moral injuries that accompany killing and coercion. Butler's argument is not merely that war is tragic, but that its tragedy is structured, predictable, and repeatable because the cost accounting is skewed. If the public tallies the full bill, including care for wounded veterans, survivor support, and decades of interest payments, the stated benefits of many wars look far less convincing. This topic encourages readers to evaluate policy through a life cycle lens. What looks like a short campaign can create multi-generational consequences. Thirdly, war, finance, and the politics of influence. Another major thread is the relationship between war, finance, and policymaking. Butler argues that modern conflict is enabled not only by weapons, but by the financial structures that underwrite mobilization and shape political decisions. Banks and investors can profit from government borrowing, and markets can reward companies positioned to supply materials, transport, and technology. This creates a climate where lobbying and access matter, and where decision-makers may face subtle pressure to prioritize economic interests over public deliberation. The book's broader implication is that the national interest can be defined in ways that conveniently align with corporate balance sheets, especially when information is controlled and dissent is stigmatized. Butler's critique also points to how wartime narratives can be managed to maintain support while profits remain private and accounting remains opaque. He calls for citizens to demand transparency and to scrutinize who benefits from specific policies, contracts, and post-war arrangements. The topic remains relevant because contemporary defense spending and emergency appropriations can still involve complex procurement systems and revolving door dynamics. Butler's lens helps readers connect institutional incentives to public outcomes and ask sharper questions about accountability. Fourthly, intervention abroad and the protection of commercial interests. Butler discusses how military force can be used as an instrument to secure economic footholds overseas, whether through stabilizing friendly regimes, protecting investments, or opening markets. He portrays certain interventions as less about defending a homeland and more about enforcing favorable conditions for commerce. While the specifics reflect the era in which Butler served, the underlying pattern is a recurring one in international politics, power can be deployed to manage trade routes, resource access, debt repayment, and corporate concessions. Butler's argument challenges readers to rethink the language of liberation and security by asking what material interests sit nearby. When a government claims it must act abroad, Butler suggests examining the beneficiaries in shipping, extraction, banking, and export industries. He also highlights how ordinary citizens may be persuaded to support actions that do not improve their lives while bearing the risks and costs. This topic offers a framework for distinguishing defensive necessity from opportunistic projection of power. It encourages readers to compare stated goals with measurable outcomes and to assess whether the benefits accrue broadly or concentrate among a few institutions. The result is a more realistic, less romantic view of foreign policy that prioritizes evidence over rhetoric. Lastly, proposed reforms to reduce profiteering and limit war-making, Butler does not only criticize, he also argues for practical constraints aimed at making war harder to sell and less lucrative to pursue. A prominent idea is to remove or reduce the profit motive by controlling earnings related to war production, or by restructuring contracts so that extraordinary gains are not possible. He also advocates for clearer rules around who should bear the risks of war, suggesting that those who promote or benefit from war should be subject to the same sacrifices as those who fight. Another reform impulse in the book is democratic friction, requiring broader public consent before committing to conflict, so that decisions are not confined to narrow circles of power. These proposals reflect a belief that if incentives change, behavior changes. Even readers who do not agree with every remedy can extract a useful checklist: transparency in contracting, guardrails on lobbying, rigorous oversight of emergency spending, and honest accounting of long-term costs. The topic is valuable because it shifts the discussion from despair to design. By focusing on institutional levers, Butler invites citizens to treat war as a policy choice shaped by rules, not as an inevitable cycle driven only by fate or ideology. In conclusion, this book is best for readers who want a compact, provocative critique of modern warfare through the eyes of a highly experienced military insider. And policy students, historians, veterans, journalists, and anyone skeptical of war messaging will find it especially useful, but it also works for general readers because the argument is direct and built around incentives and outcomes rather than technical theory. The benefit is practical. It trains you to analyze claims about national security by following the money, mapping who absorbs the risks, and demanding clear evidence for intervention. That habit can improve civic judgment, voting decisions, and everyday media literacy. Compared with many anti-war titles that rely primarily on ideology or dense academic frameworks, War is a Racket stands out for its brevity, accessibility, and moral clarity rooted in lived military experience. It also frames war as a governance problem with solvable components such as contracting, oversight, and democratic consent, which can feel more actionable than purely philosophical critiques. If you want an enduring primer that challenges comforting narratives and sharpens your ability to evaluate war proposals, it is worth buying and revisiting. If you would like to support Smedley Butler, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.